Welcome to episode 75 of the Extra Sequential Podcast, hosted out of Melbourne and Perth, Western Australia. My name is Ludden.
Yes, and I am representing the Perth contingent. And my name is Chris, and this is a landmark episode, 75.
Yep, our first crossing two states. It's pretty exciting. So yes. I'll be having the finger on the pulse on the the Melbourne comic scene, I doubt, but I'll do my best.
And, so you've visited a few comic retail outlets in your few weeks then?
Yeah, I have. Minotaur's right near our house. They're all right. I've gone to All Star Comics, which is upstairs on Lonsdale Street, and they're quite a new store. And I've also been to Comics R Us this afternoon, in fact, and there's lovely chaps who run the place there. And so far, all three stores have been quite good, and there's a few I haven't checked out yet. So,
and have you left any extra sequential business cards with them or told them?
Better believe it. I've exhausted all of my cards right now. So, yes, very exciting stuff. They all say Perth's premier comics podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So we're like, Perth Comics? What's that? This is Melbourne. No, the stores so far have all been quite welcoming. Nice guys work at all of them. And I've noticed that they don't bag their comics.
Oh, okay.
Which is cool in a way.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, I prefer mine all unbagged because you're only going to take the bags off when you get home anyway.
That's true. And then chuck them in the fireplace. Is that what you do?
No, just in the recycling bin because I believe in keeping the earth green.
Mm. You're a good man, Chris. Good man to have. Any woman will be lucky to have you, which is appropriate because we're covering young romance in today's show.
Yes. I don't know if the young part is appropriate for you at least. But yes, we are going to be talking about Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. Between them, they've created a whole bunch of stuff, most namely Captain America. But in the 40s and 50s, they did a whole bunch of romance comics, which not a lot of people know about. Mm-hmm. And basically, I guess...
but were hugely successful.
I was quite surprised in doing a research for this show, and I was actually talking to Keith at Quality Comics here in Perth about this very book from Fantagraphics. And the romance comics in the kind of World War II period, well, like the superhero comics of the day, they're kind of the dominant genre. And I think I can safely speak for both of us and say that we are very impressed with this collection, and we'll be talking about it in length later today after the news.
For news this week, I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't open with kind of the major situation, which has been the SOPA bill. And it's been interesting to see that quite a few web comics have shut down their sites for a day in defiance of the SOPA bill, among them Needroid, XKCD, Dinosaur Comics, Oatmeal, Short Packed, I'm sure you've heard of. Yeah, they all blacked out for a day in protest. Just today, I believe, file hosting service Mega Upload with 50 million daily users was shut down by the feds.
Yes, it was. I don't know why, but yes.
And the co-founders and two employees were arrested in Auckland, New Zealand. It's actually a Hong Kong-based site, and they simply provide a file hosting site. It's up to users whether they want to be illegal with it. There's no search bar, and copyright material is usually taken down. So it's straight after that, Anonymous shut down the websites for the Department of Justice, Universal Music, the RAIA, RIAA, not the Royal Australian Institute of Architects, but the...
ARIA?
No, the American, what's it called? Oh, okay. Their music one. And the Motion Picture Association of America have all been shut down in retaliation by, the hacker group Anonymous. So it's end times, folks. 2012, the Mayans predicted the SOPA bill. It was written on the walls. But I wanted to bring it up because sites like Extra Sequential, we could potentially be shut down by SOPA and the Piper bills since our right to discuss copyrighted material isn't quite defended. We've actually had a few episodes taken down simply because we reviewed a movie. And because our host Mediafire is similar to Mega Upload in that it supports people being able to put up original content, they could be shut down. So,
No, I agree. It is kind of scary, isn't it? And I guess it was just a matter of time because the internet is obviously quite big. And obviously people, anything that comes big like this, you see the same kind of thing in a lot of non-progressive nations, the same kind of approach they have towards religion. You know, they kind of shut down anything that they fear might put too much power in the hands of the people.
Yeah, too much information in the hands of the people.
So it is a little bit scary, but...
Mm. But we'll do our best, even if file host gets shut down, to keep the episodes coming to you in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, we can still keep it on WordPress. I think hopefully they'll be untouchable.
Well, we hope.
Yes.
You never know.
There's also been a whole bunch of DC Comics news, which is I just kind of find boring and frustrating, so I don't want to talk too much about it.
There's one item of the DC news. They've cancelled a whole bunch of titles, and I can't even be bothered mentioning it because we knew they'd do this.
Yes.
But among the second wave, they're launching a title by China Mieville. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Yes. Mieville? I don't know. But he's quite a well-known young writer. I'm currently reading The City and the City, and it's a fantastic book. But he's launching a comic called Dal H. They're describing it as like a bold new take on the Dal H for Hero concept, where an ordinary person becomes temporarily superpowered.
It's actually a pretty interesting concept, and it's been around, I think, again, since the 50s or 60s. I've actually got the Showcase Presents collected edition of the Dal H for Hero, and basically you have this kind of watch clock thing, and you dial and you get different powers.
Yeah.
Kind of like, what's that, Ben 10 kind of?
It's like Ben 10 by China Mieville.
But yeah, as of issue 8th of April, the title's been cancelled. Our Men of War, Mr. Terrific, OMAC, Hawk and Dove, Black Hawks, and Static Shock, and I think the 6 new series that are replacing them. And Rob Liefeld, one of the most controversial creators, he's having a huge presence in the new 52, so he's joining 3 different ongoing series in May. He'll be plotting the Savage Hawkman and Grifter, as well as writing and illustrating the Deathstroke. So it's a bit of a shame, and people aren't happy with this. Sticking with DC, their new logo has actually officially, as of yesterday, been released for DC Entertainment and DC Comics. They only had the new one for less than 7 years, and there's been a few complaints about this new one, which kind of, to me, you've seen it, I assume, Aladdin. It looks like a Band-Aid, which is half off. it looks very bland, and I was talking to the guys at the comic shop, and they're saying, it looks like something for an accounting firm, and it's got the DC plus under that. It's got DC Comics, so it's actually got DC twice. We'll put the pictures up and you can decide for yourself.
This logo, I should mention, they've since released pictures of, for each individual book or the main ones, they're actually doing slightly customized versions. Yes, so the Green Lantern one is kind of glowing green, and they'll kind of have textures and so forth, which is an interesting, I kind of like that they've done that. And seeing them on the comic cover, I think they actually look pretty good. It's quite minimal, it's very modern, and comic fans don't like modern things, I've learnt.
I guess it's a lot more clean than the previous one, which is the star swooshy kind of thing, which a lot of people said looked like something from a washing powder.
Or like a sports team or something?
Yes, and actually were sued by DC Shoes when they unveiled that, because it was pretty similar. But yeah, you're right, it could be interesting, and I guess it's kind of, right now it's kind of bland, but we'll see it in action. And I think when they use it across the board for video games, movies, TV shows, cartoons, they'll actually have it kind of in action, I guess. It'll in motion, it might look a lot better.
I believe they're using that whole page turning aesthetic for their iPad applications and so forth. So it's nice to see they're continuing that that branding across everything, not just a logo. So
true. I mean, it would have been nice if they did this when the new 52 was launched.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
And as also very briefly going back to the cancellation of those 6 titles in April, number 8, a lot of people were kind of, well, that's a bad place to end. They didn't even give these a full year before they cancelled them. So you've got 8 issues, and traditionally it's usually like, you know, 4 to 6 issues are collected in a trade paperback. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. And usually story arcs are about that. So hopefully these titles, Men of War, Mr. Terrific, etc., that are being cancelled, end on a good note for people that have been reading them. But it seems a bit panicky to me. I would have given them at least a full year, surely. But anyway.
I agree with you. I think it sets a wrong standard for what new readers should expect maybe a title they've reacted well to, like Men of War or Mr. Terrific was fine. I mean, you know, I didn't love it. But there's also, it also reduces the number of minority starring superhero books by 3.
Yes, you're right. It does. And women. Oh, well, women are minority. Are we counting women as minority?
Not in reality, no.
Not in reality, but in comics we are. Comics that actually star women as lead characters, Hawk and Dove. But lastly, getting away from DC, David Wohl, who was the from Top Cow, published in Top Cow, who did Witchblade and various other series, has now resigned as the editor-in-chief of Radical Publishing. Radical have really been quite quiet lately, and quite a few people have noticed. They used to put out a lot of awesome books, The Last Days of American Crime, Hot Wire, Reckon for the Dead, Legends of the Enchanted, I think a whole bunch of really high-quality good books, Calabar, the Hercules one. They're hardly making any comics at all now. Radical output, yes. I'm sure, very high-quality, glossy stuff, really kind of stood out on the shelf. David Wohl was kind of, he's quit, and there's a bit of a, from Barry Levine, who's the founder of Radical, he's basically let out this press release of saying, economics of the comic book business have changed. Radical has evolved into a transmedia company with a publishing division. I hate that word transmedia, basically means anything. So it sounds like they're moving away from comics and into movies and stuff.
Into intellectual property and animated. Yeah,
we are still creating and publishing original IP with our creative partners, mostly in Illustrator novel format, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a shame. But, I mean, they really stood out. So hopefully they get back to comics and don't forget how they started. But I could also imagine that their stuff is very expensive. It's not just monthly cheap paper. It's expensive stuff to distribute and print. So I can understand why they'd be cutting their product down a bit. But I hope they don't get rid of this division entirely.
I'm going to call it. I think DC Comics will stop publishing comics in 15 years, and they'll focus just on intellectual property, movies, TV shows, that sort of thing. I'm putting my very small reputation on the line.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they stop producing monthly patches.
Yes.
As digital gets bigger, they one-off might just books do and trades things. And whatnot.
Your Earth 2 graphic novels, what have you.
Yeah, and lastly, a bit of DC news, CW, TV series CW, which I think is the home of Supernatural and was Smallville, I believe, has ordered a pilot for Green Arrow, the Emerald Archer, Green Arrow, DC Comics character who most of you may be familiar with, played by Justin Hartley in Smallville. So this will be different. It won't be the same characters in Smallville, but, yeah, so they've ordered a pilot. And you might also remember that there's been a movie in the works for, 5 years now called Supermax, which was written by David Goyer, who wrote most of the Batman films and directed the last Blade film and wrote them all. Yeah, hopefully Green Arrow's time might shine. I've been a big fan of the character for a while, if not lately. So, yeah. But
he has potential as more than just that Robin Hood guy.
Yeah, but I think, the Wonder Woman pilot failed. The Powers TV series pilot is being kind of retooled based on the Brian Michael Bendis kind of superhero, normal detective in a superhero world. That has just been kind of retooled. So it hasn't been a great time for superhero pilots lately. But I think, Green Arrow kind of is in that Batman league, I guess, a normal guy with extraordinary abilities. So
and lots like of money.
And lots of money, yeah. That is the news for today, I believe.
I believe so. Let's get into our feature topic. They're about to begin. Young romance, Chris. Is there a nicer sound to the ears?
No. Romance is young.
Those are both good things.
You can still be old and have romance.
That's true. I've been watching Golden Girls lately. That's a great show.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I've been watching it too. And
Mitch Hurwitz was a producer or something, wasn't he?
Who was?
Mitch Hurwitz. Isn't he the producer on Arrested Development?
Ah, I was wondering where I knew that name from.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Yeah, good call. I think he created Arrested Development, didn't he?
That's right. So next time some hipster laughs at us for liking Golden Girls, you can tell him we were into Mitch Hurwitz before he was cool.
Yes.
We're OG. We're original gangsters. Hey, what were we talking about again? Oh, that's right.
Young Romance. So this is a book just been released from Fantagraphics. It's, $30, 200 and something odd pages. Mm. And it basically collects, 21 different short romantic tales published from 1947 to 1959, created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. Joe Simon and Jack Kirby created Captain America. They created the Boys Ranch, the Newsboys, the Newsboy Legion, the Boy Commandos, a lot of kind of ahead of their time genres, and here they've effectively created a genre which isn't really around anymore. I guess the closest thing would be Archie, maybe?
I guess the relationship drama, but not in short story form, certainly. These stories, as a good analogy, they're a bit like the crime tales of the time in terms of short story format. I guess they're more dramatic and not as sappy as some might imagine. But, yeah, as you mentioned, there's 21 stories, and the book has been selected, edited, and compiled by Michel Gagné. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yep.
And you can tell it's a true labor of love. He's put a lot of work into the restoration process because these are all from scans of comics. There are no original proofs surviving. These stories these comics themselves, they weren't really collected by collectors at the time. They were usually bought and read and discarded, so very few have survived, and the few that have aren't in good condition. So these kind of, I guess these collected books are keeping history alive in some sense, which is why they're vital, really.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Gagné, there's a brief kind of a few of the extras here, and he basically talks about how he kind of went around and captured all of these. And yeah, because they were a lot of the girls are reading these, and the guys would generally keep their comics.
Yes.
The girls would kind of read them and throw them away. So yeah, he had to find copies on eBay. He found in collectors' markets or secondhand bookstores. Now he did whatever he could. So he, from about 2002, he started getting all different projects from people and the original comics, and then the project started to get bigger and bigger because, yeah, a lot of people know that Kirby and Simon basically created this genre, and it was a huge genre, you know. I mean, most people know Jack Kirby, his partnership with Stan Lee. The two of them basically co-created all of the Marvel superheroes that we know and love today.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 1940s, superheroes were really kind of in decline. So Kirby and Simon created their first romance title, which was My Date, in 1947. It ran for 4 issues. And then they started working for a publisher called Crestwood Publications. And they were marketed as mature tales, so not all ages stuff.
Yeah.
But they were actually sold as, you know, the mature romance. And they sold very well, like literally in millions of copies. And I actually just copied and pasted something from editor Michael Gagné's outro. And he says, by 1949, dozens of publishers had entered the newly created genre with romances of their own. As many as 148 different romance books published by 26 different imprints were filling up the racks during the first half of 1950. From 1948 to 54, comic readership had reached unprecedented levels. And for the first time, thanks to the advent of romance comics, adult women were a big part of the equation. This period saw comic book sales approaching an impressive 60 million issues per month.
Yeah.
1952, over 500 original romance comic books were published in America, accounting for more than a quarter of the entire market. Those are numbers that we find baffling today. Unfortunately, it doesn't reach, even though population is huge, I guess we don't even come close to those numbers these days. But, yeah, it's very interesting. And like you said, you were pretty impressed. And when I think you brought up that we should do this, and I was like, this is going to be hokey, it's going to be embarrassing, I'm going to roll my eyes.
Must you think so little of Kirby and Simon?
No, but of the time period and the genre, I did. But, I mean, Kirby and Simon went on to do tremendous things. Joe Simon just died late last year, and Jack Kirby died in the mid-90s. But I was very impressed with this, and it was a lot more, not hardcore, but a lot more adult and kind of funny in some ways, and a lot more kind of plain speaking than I had envisioned. You know, it wasn't girls tripsing through the, you know, daisy fields with birds flying around the head, you know.
I expected more of a, not Happy Days, but I guess more of like a teenage romance angle, whereas it's really approached quite differently. And I get the feeling that's probably more Kirby and Simon's work. He makes a point, Gagné does, in his introduction that a lot of the other comics maybe weren't as to this level. But I find it fascinating that these two major creators who play a huge part in comics history, very little of their work has really been outside of, you know, the major popular characters who everyone's heard of. Very little has been collected or put out in this kind of library format, which is intended to survive and, I guess, keep their legacy alive in this way. So these books are very important books to read, or at least just to educate yourself on comic history. I find this kind of stuff really fascinating. You get a different picture of what things were like. It's very easy to paint a picture of comics history where it's only superheroes.
Yes.
Because that's kind of the genre that survived this. But in the 40s, this was a huge period of genre experimentation. Kind of similar to today in a way. Things weren't, you know, the traditional superhero thing was working, I suppose, but people wanted to try other genres and experiment. So maybe there's some lessons that we can draw from these older books in a way, to apply to today.
Yeah, you're right. It was an interesting time, and particularly when World War II, I know a lot of kind of GIs took comics with them, and that's how kind of American comics got to be big in, and that's how, you know, before movies and TV series, a lot of the kind of Asian kind of countries got to know who Spider-Man or Superman were because of the GIs would kind of take comics with them, and that was a large readership, I guess, for a part of them. So this was an interesting time, kind of the post-war boom, and I guess, yeah, crime comics were kind of pretty big around this time as well.
These stories, they're quite, they're surprisingly I don't want to say modern, but the drama that's within them is certainly modern. You get a sense of a piece of history. I guess I sort of liked it on the level almost of something like Mad Men. You get a picture of this time in history. Their motivations make sense. It's not melodramatic. At times there are a few melodramatic things, but it's very, the touch that Kirby and Simon put here is very kind of sensitive in the stories they approach. I mean, I think once we talk about some of the stories, it'll be clear that maybe they're not what people are expecting.
Well, they are. Yeah, they are. I mean, these short stories are collected from four different titles, which is Young Romance, Young Love, Western Love, and Real West Romances. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that we should mention as well, Michael Gagné, in his introduction, says that Simon and Kirby were, you know, they ahead of their time in social kind of areas, that they dealt with kind of every type of social issue except for interracial romance.
Yeah.
Which, interestingly, was against the law in most American states.
Yes.
And of course, there was no gay or lesbian issues even vaguely hinted at. He said that, you know, that didn't come along until, you know, the underground comics of the 60s and 70s.
Right.
So that would have been career suicide to have, you know, a white guy and a black girl kissing or whatever. Mm. I guess Star Trek, when Captain Kirk kissed a hero, was the first time it was done in some kind of mass media format. But, nevertheless, these are pretty kind of racy and pretty straight to the bone. So, yeah, anyway, let's talk about some of these short stories of the 21. Did you have a favourite at all?
I did, and it's a tricky one to toss up because there's some really striking stories in here. The one that stood out to me was The Town and Tony Benson. I don't know if you remember this one.
Yep.
Which is a sequel to an earlier short story where Tony marries a former gambler, from what I could gather, and the whole town's against their marriage. But he's kind of reformed, or so he claims, and so she trusts. And the whole town doesn't trust that they're going straight, basically. And the story is they come about this inheritance, and you get the feeling that the aunt's given it to them knowing that the husband will do the wrong thing, like it's a trap, and they're aware of it, and everyone in the town expects the worst of them. It's kind of this fascinating story of all these different threads. And it's about, like, their marriage rather than, like, this young romance, which is what to be expected. But there's always questions of trust and dealing with the distrust and disdain of others and finance problems, which I don't think I've seen in any other romance story. Usually the man's a millionaire. That tends to be common.
Yes.
But this was kind of surprisingly sophisticated in terms of a good dramatic story that unfolds in a natural way. And yes, it has an upbeat resolution, quite a few of these do. But the way it unfolds, I did not expect this kind of story from, say, this period and these kind of comics. And this book is full of surprises like that.
Mm, it is. And I think, they are very melodramatic at times. Yeah. But I think it's very interesting the way Joe Simon writes, Jack Kirby draws. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, the characters are interwoven and their stories are kind of interwoven quite well.
Yes.
And even though a lot of the stories are quite short, you know, a dozen pages or so, you never feel they're in a hurry, like they don't meet across a crowded room in one panel and fall in love in the next panel. It seems to happen, that a progression happens quite naturally.
Mm.
And the structure of the stories is kind of interesting. It's something that doesn't really happen these days. Each story is kind of told from the dramatic point of view. Usually, I think they're all told from the point of view of the protagonist, the female.
One has a male protagonist that I could tell. Okay. Yeah, but yeah, you're right, yeah.
And then they usually have like a one-page kind of cover page kind of summary hinting at what's to come. And I wrote one of my favourite lines, which was, why does the furtive
vessel of stolen love got the same one?
All right. Why does the furtive vessel of stolen love inevitably come to tragedy on the rock-bound coast of human experience?
Yes, that stood out to me too.
You know, see, reading on the comics page these days, still very melodramatic. And then as I was reading some of these stories, I wrote down, just to set your mind, listeners, just to set your mind into the time frame in which this is, some of my favourite expressions are, golly, see here, young hoodlum, don't be an old fuss budget. Don't know what that is. Jumping catfish, swell. Gosh, you look sweet, Lizzie, cute as a daisy in Sacker's meadow. And lastly, you stone-hearted Shylock.
Ooh, that's a bit racist.
You don't have insults like that these days. But, yeah, one of the stories I wanted to mention was, and I think it's the first one, Boy Crazy.
Yes.
And kind of a lot of these stories are, yeah, very young girls falling in love, usually with much older men, usually friends of their fathers or somebody who's just come back in town. And I guess that's kind of, I guess women married young back in the 40s and 50s,
I believe they did. I don't think there were too many job opportunities. So if you didn't marry young, I think even in, that might even be in Boy Crazy. Is that the one where he's dating his secretary?
No, that's another one, which I was going to mention.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later then. Yep.
But your Boy Crazy centres on 17-year-old Susie. She lives with her 35-year-old aunt Martha, who her mind, in Susie's mind, 35 is like positively ancient.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing about this era is all the men, you know, have, well, not all of them, but they have, you know, tweed jackets and they wear fedoras and it's all very Mad Men-esque, isn't it? But young Susie goes to the carnival with, as Aunt Martha calls him, that pimple-faced Jensen boy. But Susie soon gets bored of him as the pimply guy runs out of money. So she goes home with this guy she just met called Rod after he bumps into her bumper car.
Mm-hmm.
So she likes him because he has a car. So they go for a bit of a drive and then she dumps him and goes home where she meets her Aunt Martha's gentleman caller,
mm-hmm.
Clint Roberts. And, yes, they do use the great term name. Gentleman caller.
Yeah.
So Susie and her Aunt Martha's gentleman caller, Clint Roberts, are immediately attracted to each other, even though there's like a 20-year age difference. He's a novelist, so he goes away for a while to work on his new book after they've kind of discussed their feelings for each other. And Susie soon gets bored and goes out parking with Rod again, the guy with the bumper car.
Yeah.
But Rod goes for a dive and hits some rocks and dies. So, and then it's in the newspapers and Clint comes back and realizes that Susie is too young and impetuous for him, so he dumps her. So it's all this very kind of, it's quite, these stories are quite action-packed. Like, it's not just people sitting around, you know, the drawing room, looking at each other lovingly in each other's eyes. Like, quite a lot of stuff happens, like bad stuff. And amongst this stuff, people find love, lose love, fall in love with other people.
Yeah. The drama of them is different. It rarely ends with them professing their love. Usually that happens early in the comics. Something else stands in the way, and it's usually, I like to think these compare really well to the crime comic, Crime Doesn't Pay comics, because they're all a hard lesson learned comics. These unabashed desires, and usually they're poorly thought out, and all their friends and family are telling them, no, he's too old for you, or no, you shouldn't pretend that you're wealthy just to get those kind of things. And then it does resolve in a tragic and usually ironic conclusion, sometimes with a twist, upbeat ending. Rather than the main thrust of the story ever really being just, will he go out with me?
Yes.
It's much more interesting than that. There's something else standing in the way, whether it's family members who are opposed to it. And you see maybe less of that in the post-code story, which can make up the second half of this book, the post-comic code stories, but we'll get into those, I guess. Did you read the Fraulein Sweetheart?
I did. I read Fraulein Sweetheart is interesting. That was set in World War II. There's this former Nazi youth leader who falls in love with a American GI.
Yeah.
And then basically he leaves her after he confronts her and says, you know, we both love each other, but I can't believe that you support Hitler. And she basically says, well, I believe, you know, he's leading my country. I believe in what he's doing. And, and he says, how could you do that? You know, but then two of her friends decide to blow up the US military base where the guy that she loves is kind of stationed.
Yeah.
So she warns him. And
they've already broken
base.
Up at this point, we should say. So this is like an additional thing afterwards. This is almost like an action war story. This could have fit in very nicely in any number of war comics in a way.
That's true. And there's a couple of kind of Western cowboy stories in here as well, but most of them are set kind of in the 40s and 50s. She warns him.
Yeah.
Saves the base and, kind of teaches her how to love and then he leaves. That was kind of an interesting one.
Well, I've never seen any romance story where the two characters are split on ideological terms, like political terms. This was the story set, I think, 3 years after World War II, so the Americans have occupied Germany. So there's quite a bit of anti-American sentiment there in Germany, and he's asking her about the atrocities, and her point of view is, well, we didn't know about them. You know, these are real questions of the time, I guess. And as a time capsule, it's fascinating, and as a story, it's extremely readable. And their relationship isn't all roses. They're, like, aware of this problem, but they just try not to talk about it because it's too heavy until they break up about it, which is unexpected, and she doesn't suddenly change her mind at the end. It's just like this glimmer of hope that, you know, things could be all right one day. And then we got the European Union and economic. So Germany did take over the world in the end. And we should mention it's Kirby's, Jack Kirby's art. So his inking and so forth, the way he draws rugged men is very... They look like they belong in any of his superhero comics, honestly. Maybe not so muscly, but their faces, they look like James Cagney, you know? They've got that...
Yes, and it's interesting. He does ugly people quite well as well. Yeah. There's quite a few ugly people. Mm. I mean, the protagonist is always a guy and a girl, but usually the supporting cast... like their older relatives or, you know, the janitor or the sailor or whatever. They're actually quite ugly. But the main cast are always quite handsome and attractive.
Well, he has a good handle. One of the characters is a brother, and when he's being a douche about her romance, he looks incredibly ugly. And then later in the story, when he's kind of comforting her, his face seems to soften a bit. It's
gentle.
Yeah, and... I guess that's kind of Kirby's control of inking. These comics look fantastic as well as read very well. And we should mention the color and the inks have been restored by Michel Gagné. So
yes,
a lot of them were really bad offset prints, like the color was all over the place, oversaturated inks on the lettering, all the problems which make old comics very hard to read. So it's noticeable on some pages where he's made some fixes, but he's kept all the colours original. There's no digital gradients here, people, if that's what you
mean. No, it looks old, but not as old as it would if it hadn't been kind of touched up. And there's quite a few extras in this 200-plus page book. There's a photo cover gallery, some of them had photo covers. There's notes about the restoration, which you discussed then, and it's quite remarkable and a time-consuming job, and it gives examples of before and after. And I did want to briefly just mention here that some of the titles, just to give you an idea. Her Tragic Love, Boy Crazy, The Perfect Cowboy, Resort Romeo, Mr. Know-It-All Falls in Love, and my favourite, even though I didn't read it, Norma, Queen of the Hot Dogs. Did you read that one?
That was pre-code, I assume.
Getting back to the yard, it's interesting because I think Gagné mentions as well that in here there's no action. There's a couple of people slaps and... but I think there might be a fist fight or two, but nothing too major. But
there's an amazing dream sequence panel where she imagines she's being swept away by a Viking.
Yes,
and that panel could have belonged in any number of action comics of the time, you know?
That's true. Yeah. But yeah, most of it's just told in the acting of the characters. There are hints of Jack Kirby's kind of future work in the 60s for Marvel, but there's no... What Kirby is known for is the muscular bodies, the insane sci-fi gadgets and the dynamic action shots. There's none of that really here. And there are some kind of crude expressions, but this is 20 years before it kind of hit his mark. But generally it's kind of fine and just as dramatic as the scripts are, really. And every character looks different. Like, you can't really get them confused with one another, I would say. And I guess most of the pages are, you know, usually upright rectangular panels, you know, 6 to 9 panels per page. So there's no, which is standard at the time, there's no trippy double page splash shreds or anything remarkable. It's pretty linear from a visual storytelling standpoint, which is one, because the stories are easy enough to follow and pretty dramatic and enticing. And I just found myself, as I was reading them, I think you mentioned before they were quite surprising. I really didn't know as I was reading them. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen next. Are they going to get married happily ever after? Are they going to...
Yeah, there's very little of that, isn't there? Yeah.
It's like throwing the dice. You don't know what's going to happen.
Is she going to be miserable and he's going to be dead? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Or, like, there's actually a few of the stories end with death. Most of them just end with them breaking up, either because she's done something stupid and learned a hard lesson, as we mentioned. They're almost like parables... For instead of like Mills and Boone's novels today, which I guess are more escapist, these aren't so much escapist as not fables, but stories that help you
warnings.
Know, warnings of
warnings on the rocky road to love,
without being too preachy, I suppose.
Yes,
yeah.
And it's interesting because I think a lot of the covers that are reproduced here say that based on true stories, you know, based on your stories. Mm. I highly doubt that that's true. Where people would send their letters to Joe Simon and he'd make a story out of their actual what happened to them. But nevertheless, they... do we want to talk about any of the postcode?
Yeah, I made some notes about that. I mean...
We should mention what the comics code is, actually. So the comics code was introduced in, 1952, 53 by Dr. Frederick Wortham, who was a child psychiatrist at the time. And he saw kind of the comics, particularly the crime comics, that were pretty brutal and bloody at the time. He said, these are outrageous. Kids can't be reading these. And it's interesting. There's actually, I don't know if you saw this, Mladen, on the net today, but if Bleeding Cool Comics Alliance have run this story, that Fox News this week ran a story on the sex and violence in DC's New 52. I haven't watched the video as yet, but it's
Fox News.
So it's kind of the same, yeah, Fox News. So it's kind of happening. And the reporter like takes, you know, rated T for teen comics to the schoolyard and to 12-year-olds says, what do you think of this? It's kind of ridiculous. They're not, but anyway.
After they point out that it says T for teen on them and then they take them to see, take them for some children, that just seems strange.
I know, it's very weird. So yeah, the comics code was introduced basically as a form of censorship.
Self-censorship, we should say, was a self-determined body.
Yes.
Rather than, say, a government placed body. So
yes. And there was a whole bunch of rules that stuff you could and could not do. Yes. And that's got a lot of horror, like EC and a lot of horror kind of comics fell by the wayside, unfortunately. But here you can kind of see some of the rules, even though after Werthen's book, Seduction of the Innocent, the Comics Authority was founded, which no longer is around, we should point out. Now publishers have their own self-approval process, and that, like video games and movies, it's just got their own ratings.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to read out quickly some of the 7 points that relate to marriage and sex of the standards of the Comics Code Authority. Divorce should not be treated humorously, nor shall it be represented as desirable. The treatment of love romance stories shall emphasize the value of the home and the sanctity of marriage. Mm-hmm. Illicit sex relations are neither to be hinted at or portrayed. Violent love scenes, as well as sexual abnormalities, are unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Seduction and rape should never be shown or suggested, etc., etc. It didn't really affect these Kirby and Simon stories because they weren't really, even though they were kind of hardcore, they weren't showing rapes or, you know, men beating up women or anything of that nature anyway. So
you do see less of the stories like Fraulein Sweetheart, where it's their problem is deeper than just will they, won't they. It's there's a few of those kind of, and I guess that was across the board of all comics. They were kind of dumbed down in a way. They weren't allowed to touch on anything that was too of the time or too risky in terms of political, social, you know, those kind of questions. So I guess there's less of that.
Yeah, and I think perhaps there's more happier endings in these 7 post-Comics Code stories that are included here. They also seem to be the artwork is a bit shoddier and the stories are a bit shorter and the stories aren't plotted as eloquently. But I guess they've been doing romance comics by, you know, 15, 20 years by this point. So they do run out at some point. But it's kind of the same flavour, but slightly more rushed, I felt, and watered down with some happy endings. The first post-Comics Code story is about this grumpy, balding father who doesn't want his son to get married at 21 to his 19-year-old girlfriend. Yeah. And he keeps telling him off, "You're too young to be married." I think the title is "Not Old Enough to Marry." But he's, "I don't care, you know. I'm going to do what I want. I know how old I am. I know what love feels like." So then basically they elope. They run off to go and the girl to the registrant's office, but it's so crowded. Mm. So they have to wait and wait and wait. And then his dad shows up at the office and all his old kind of tough-looking army buddies or whatever kind of surround them and say, "You're coming with me." And they kind of drag him to this secret room. They close the door. And he's like, "You can't force me to break up. I'm getting married, Dad, whether you like it or not." And then there's sudden swift turnaround where the dad says, "Actually, we're going to marry you right here and now. Here's my friend, the celebrant." He's like, the dad changed his mind so quickly.
I've got to say he's the worst dad, because if his decision was based on only if you really loved her would you have married her after I said no, unlike any number of teenagers who do stuff just because their parents told them not to, I thought maybe Kirby and Simon were being a little bit naive there, and that's probably the worst advice you can give as a magazine for late teens to read, because I'm sure their parents are like, "You shouldn't date that Menzies boy." And they're like, "So mum and dad really do want me to date that Menzies boy? I'm confused." But, yeah, a lot of the stories are in the second half, the post-code, they end with a marriage or they end with the "let's get married" line or something like that, or just an embrace. Whereas the previous ones, they would just kind of move in together. They wouldn't get married. They'd just live together, or they'd stuff, which I'm sure was for the prudes, was very risky at the time.
Mm, yeah. True. Did you read the postcode story called Lovesick?
No.
There's this nurse called Betty who's looking after kind of the farmhand for a father or something. One day he has an accident with a tractor and he's laid up in bed and can't walk. His name's Tim. So Betty, the nurse, starts to look after Tim. Tim starts to fall for Betty. All of a sudden, this new doctor comes to town and he works quite closely with Betty. And then Betty starts to fall in love with the doctor and the doctor starts to fall in love. The doctor gives Tim an operation for his leg, but it doesn't work. So the doctor kind of gets angry and he's like, "I don't understand how it didn't work." So he leaves town. But then, you know, Betty's still kind of looking after Tim. And he goes, "Betty, I have a secret. my legs do work. The operation was a success. I just wanted to drive the doctor away from you. I was faking it all this time. And she's going, how could you treat me if you really loved me? You would have told me the truth. So she gets on a train and runs to the city to find the doctor. It's very melodramatic to the max. That was kind of an interesting story.
There's one I wanted to mention. This one girl's envious of another girl who lives on their street who's incredibly rich. She decides she's going to steal the rich girl's fiancé-to-be. It's like I'm going to ruin her life and I'm going to laugh in her face because she's so wealthy and she's had everything. So anyway, she succeeds. She wins the boyfriend over and the last page, it's revealed that the rich girl is in a wheelchair. And her realization is that I am such an asshole. And that's how it ends.
I don't know why. I mean, the men seem to fall for these women, but the women in this story, there's one called Lizzie's Back in Town, where basically the woman Lizzie basically plays these three men who want to marry her against one another. It's quite selfish and calculating and manipulative. And it seems that, I don't know, a man, is it a good man hard to find in the 40s and 50s? Because these women seem to go to extraordinary lengths to get the man they want.
Maybe once you turn 19, you're just too old. You're a spinster, so you have to realize.
But it is pretty interesting.
A lot of the female characters are surprising the world. They've all got motivations that make internal sense. They're not silly flight, or sometimes they're silly flighty, but it's an important part of the story. They're fleshed out in a sense that enough for these stories. And when we talk about female characters that are interesting or internally consistent, I think these are really surprisingly good examples, considering these are just romance comics from a particular period, which is not known for its sophistication in romance comics.
That's true. And I did want to mention Joe Simon's plots and scripts, but we've briefly talked about them. But, yeah, these are usually, you know, a dozen or so pages, quite fast-paced, easy enough to understand. But they do pull you in and make you want to know what happens next. Usually the men are quite strong, handsome, well-to-do, and the women are usually younger, hot-headed, stubborn. Mm.
Yeah.
Kind of the men seem to be presented as more logical and calculating, logical and kind of not ruled by emotion, whereas the women are. And it's interesting that the women always fall harder for the men than the men do.
Yeah.
But I guess it's always, I think, from the women's point of view. So you'll have, usually it's just driven by dialogue and sometimes it's driven by the woman. Usually at the start or the end of the tale, talking directly to the reader. And
that's true.
And that is how I learned to love Tom for a man, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Although the stories are quite short, there's actually a lot of emotions, and I think he does a good job, Simon, of making the characters kind of fall in love naturally, not forced or rushed.
It's quite genuine, that the human emotions they go through are very genuine, like the stubbornness, the things that you don't want to hear if someone's telling you someone's bad for you. Like, I like that kind of stuff. And in that sense, it's a step above, say, the superhero comics of the time, which were very inhuman. No one behaved like a normal person a lot of the time. So for me, a big positive surprise. I mean, I'd thoroughly recommend this, especially to anyone who consider themselves, you know, a fan of Jack Kirby and Joe Simon and those guys. It's well worth, and it's probably necessary, I think, to see these other aspects of their work.
There's a quote from Gagné which says that he understands that Jack Kirby penciled around 1,800 pages of romance stories. Young Romance from Fantagraphics collects this story from 1947 to 1959, so it's certainly not all of the work that he's done, but it's certainly an interesting period, and a lot of people don't kind of realise what a tumultuous period comics have had over the last century or two. So Young Romance, full colour, available now, and grab it. I think it would be a good Valentine's Day present for the lover in your life.
Absolutely. And, yeah, even if you're just slightly interested in the 40s and 50s as a style, as a time, these are fascinating stories on their own, not just for comics history enthusiasts. Hearty recommendations all around.
Yes.
So let's wrap her up, Chris, like a Valentine's Day chocolate gift box.
Sure.
I'm so sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me today.
You're excited. You're in a new city.
Yes.
Is it raining?
Let me check. It's foreboding.
Oh, good.
That's always good.
That could only end well for you.
And this week, I'm guest appearing on The Sequel Cast, which is a podcast which reviews each film in a franchise one film at a time. And I'm on there talking about The Lost World, Jurassic Park too. So
that's we actually had Matt on one of our shows, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Mid last year, I believe, we talked about the X-Men movie franchise. So that's you can dig that one up out of our archives, and we'll try and get Matt or maybe Thrasher from the sequel cast on the show, talk about comics and such.
Nice one. Mm. Thank you for listening, everybody. Let us know if you've got any, even if you do pick up this young romance collection from Fans of Graphics, and you were also, like us, surprised at the quality and the drama, dramatic appeal of these tales when you first read them. Thank you for listening. You can check out my blog, comicbookjesus.com. All our previous podcasts are on iTunes and extrasequential.com. You can email the show with Chris at blah, blah, blah. At Chris with a K, Chris at extrasequential.com. If you have Facebook. Any perhaps things you'd like to hear us talk about in future episodes or anything at all, let's get the conversation going, people.
Yeah, hit us up on the Facebook, the Extra Sequential site there, and come see us around some of the comic book events that are going to be happening in Perth and Melbourne. I'm sure we'll try and make our way down there. To those things. Music for the show is at purgeorder.com. You can catch my writing at thefindmag.com. I think that's everything.
Whew. Covers it all. Thank you for listening, everybody, to our 75th episode, Virtual High Five, Maladam. And we will look forward to speaking at / with you next week.
Bye, Q.
Bye-bye.